Hey Trailblazers, this is Jason, your host of the Trailblazing Texas podcast. Before we jump into our latest episode, I've got some incredible news for you. Are you gearing up for your next big hike or backpacking trip? Well, we at Trailblazing Texas podcast have partnered up with Trekker Joe's, the ultimate Texas outfitter, to bring you something I feel absolutely special. Listeners, you of the Trailblazing Texas podcast can now get a one-time 15% off their gear purchases at Trekker Joe's. That's right. Whether you're a first-time customer at Trekker Joe's or a repeat customer like me, you can save big and hit the trails well-prepared. So upon checkout, use code TTP15 to claim your 15% discount and in the process support an amazing local Texas business. So happy trails, and don't forget to tell your hiking buddies. Now on with the episode. Welcome to the Trailblazing Texas podcast, where we embark on a journey through our diverse Texas landscapes and breathtaking trails while always engaging with our amazing Texas hiking community. So settle in, tighten up those bootlaces, and get ready for the thrilling tales awaiting for you on this episode. Welcome to the Trailblazing Texas podcast. I'm your host, Jason, and I'm excited to say they're back. The panel is back for another episode. You can hear the excitement in the background. Got some sad news. So JR, the gentleman that was sleeping during the last panel podcast, couldn't join us today. He was asleep. He's laying in his bed. But we have a newcomer that will hopefully be part of the panel podcast episodes that we do. Kyle, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
The legend.
So, of course, guys, you know, we have Joe from Trekker Joe's. We have Todd from Todd versus Todd. And we have Kyle from San Antonio.
Yes, sir.
From parts unknown.
Kyle. There is something that we need to do before we get started is the listeners will only take advice from people that they trust, that they have a background on. So go ahead and give us some of your badass accomplishments in the hiking and backpacking world.
So I started off with Lone Star Trail here in Texas. And then I think I did the Eagle Rock Loop Trail. And then I did the Guadalupe Ridge Trail. Then I did the Continental Divide Trail, and then I've done the Appalachian Trail. And then, oh, I forgot the Centennial Trail that I hiked with Todd and Pine Frog. That might be it. I've done a couple of high pointers, or what do they call them? What do they call them in Colorado again? Bagsome Peaks or whatever? Yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, I don't think I've done that much, but I guess I got more mileage than most.
Pretty much it. He's done the CDT and the 18. Oh, I think that's it.
So Kyle, how long have you been hiking? And
So pretty much, I guess the best way to describe it, what brought me to it is that I've always liked going to the state parks here in Texas. And when COVID hit, it shut down like all the access to like going to the parks immediately to where you had to wait like, I don't know, like a week or two to go into the parks. And I've never been about waiting or whatever. It's, you know, I'm a last minute type of person. I don't like to plan stuff. And I started looking up public lands here in Texas, and I saw where the Sam Houston National Forest had a 100-mile trail. And I'm like, huh. I was like, well, I've never hiked before. And I just started watching YouTube videos and stuff like that. And I just watched enough of it. And I'm like, yeah, I want to go for a run for a 100-mile trip or whatever. Never done anything like that. And anyways, I went on it, and I just remember getting to my car after 100 miles, and my legs were like spaghetti. And I'm like, I'm never doing that again. It was like so sketchy driving my standard shift car back. And I'm like, man, I don't think my legs are going to be able to make it all the way back to San Antonio. Yeah, that's what I remember. I think it was Easter, one of the holidays I got back with my family or whatever. My sister was asking me questions back because she's had interest in long distance hikes as well. But she had kids and all that stuff, so never did it. But she was asking like what I thought about it. And I'm like, yeah, I think that cured me of ever doing a long trail. But then it's like, I don't know, it's like an addiction. It's like a love-hate relationship. It's just kind of like you get back out there and it's like, yeah, let's do this again.
It's funny how that type 2 fun works.
Yep.
So that's almost as funny of a story as when I had Todd first on the podcast, and his first attempt at the Lone Star hiking trail with his friend. You know, they have 100-pound backpacks. He catches his friend because he's way ahead. He comes back and his friend's crawling on the ground.
Crawling, hands and knees. I can't do it. I can't do it.
You know, the last time I threw hiked the Lone Star, I had three guys that have never hiked before, and I had them on the podcast, and we were kind of just reminiscing about the trip, and not one of them has kept up with hiking since then. They were like, yeah, we're not.
Cured them of that. A 96-mile inoculation.
Yep. So let's get started. To the listeners, if you want to get caught up with the panel, the previous two episodes that we had, if you go back through all the episodes, I think we're up to like 56, 57, 58. We are the panel, the first episodes are episode 25 and 26. Again, it was with Joe, Todd, and JR. So you can stay with us right now and catch up later, or you can stop, pause, go catch up with those two episodes and then join us now. So the very first question that we're going to kick off with today, and it's to me what every smart hiker or backpacker should pack in their backpack, day pack, is a plan B. I originally saw this question, you know, kind of thinking about it, the importance of having a plan B, and I kind of just giggled. But when you really, really think about it, this saves your life, right? Like, this is probably one of the most important things as hikers and backpackers that we can give attention to, and we definitely should think about. So Kyle, being the new guy, you get the first question. Why is it important to have a plan B when going on a hiking trip?
Not to put you on the spot or anything.
I don't know. I guess there's multiple ways I could probably answer that. But like, to me, I mean, talking about like a through hike, I'd like to have a plan B to have fun or whatever. It's kind of like, it's making me think of when I was on the AT with my buddy Cash, and I can't remember what town we were heading towards, but I was starting to read the comments, and that's when we came across the Yellow Deli cult or whatever. And I was talking to my buddy Gump that was saying like, no, you want to go into Rutland, Vermont, because that's where the cult is at, whatever, if you want to stay there. And I didn't make any plans necessarily to go there, but I always try to have an open mind when I'm on those long trails, because I don't want to be stuck to just making the trail a grind. You know, I want to be able to have a plan B and get off trail for a little bit, go have some fun. That's the way I was looking at it, is like, go in there, get a free shower, get a free meal. And then my buddy Gump was also telling me too, because I'm not a purist, like when it comes to long trails or whatever, he was telling me that you could use the public buses to ride up to, I think it was Mount Killington. It was like the first 4,000 footer mountain or something, I think Vermont was like when we first started hitting the 4,000 footers. And that was like the first one. Everybody was just dreading it. Well, my buddy Gump was telling me, he's like, well, if you know how to work the system, you could just ride the bus up to the top, walk down it, go back into Rutland, Vermont, sleep inside the cult place or whatever, the Yellow Deli, wake up, get breakfast, ride the bus back out there, and go back down the other side of the mountain. So you never truly walked up it. You walked down it twice. So
always thinking.
Yeah. So maybe that's not directly the answer you wanted, but like, I guess I'm not the type of person to plan. I'm very on the fly about things, but like, that's where I like to keep an open mind to where I could make a plan B. You know, plan A is to get from town to town to resupply and stuff like that. But I like to have open opportunities like, oh, let's go check out this waterfall. Let's go check out this stuff. I guess it's important to have like a plan B, I guess. Like, I guess I can bring up that example of like what happened with my buddy, Low Branch, when we were going into the San Juans after Los Chamas, New Mexico, is he didn't acclimate very well to 12,000 feet when we were going to the San Juans. And he started getting elevation sickness when we were up there. And we weren't very smart about planning going up there right after a snowstorm. He got up there and he's getting elevation sickness, and we started having to look for bailout routes because he couldn't take the, I guess, the pressure on his brain or whatever, the swelling that was going on. So it was giving him all kinds of issues. I almost died taking our reroute or whatever to get down off that 12,000 feet elevation. And so that was a learning lesson to where you should have a plan B, like, okay, if we're going to go that high in elevation, where are we going to go? We're open and exposed. There's nobody else up here but us. And anyways, yeah, it's like, luckily when I slid down the side of that mountain or whatever, I was able to catch a tree before I went off the cliff. So,
jeez.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend making a plan B in situations like that.
Yeah, so I like the points you brought up of being flexible. I think a lot of times when we're hiking, I think our mindset set is too rigid that we don't allow the flexibility. So when the shit hits the fan, we're still in this tunnel of maybe our destination, instead of thinking about, okay, we either need to reroute, pull back, turn around. And so, yeah, I totally agree with the flexibility, and then just kind of work with what you're given. Todd, what about you? We had a lot of plan B discussions on our Guadalupe Ridge route hike.
Yeah.
So why is it important to you?
I like just having an option where you can finish the hike. You know, Joe and I had to come up with plan B, C, D when we ran out of water in the quads at one time. And that was fun. You and I, Jason, we had to come up with plan B when we decided this is too freaking hot. You want to cut some miles off here? So, you know, just got to have options. You never know what's going to happen. And yeah. if you're too rigid with your planning, then you might not get anything done.
No, I think when we're on the trail, I really thought about this. I don't know that there's one aspect of the experience of hiking and backpacking that doesn't lend itself to having a plan B, you know, whether it's side trails, cool things to see, whether it's weather, whether it's animals, wildlife, whether it's running into humans, exit points. Like, we have so many variables that I know for me now, I'm really nervous. I'm leading hikes for the Lone Star Hiking Trail Club as a volunteer. What snake season? And there's not a time on that trail outside of January and February, maybe some December, that you're not going to run into a snake. So I have, you know, there's 20 something people. I'm really thinking about, from a safety aspect, what happens if that happens. Every section that we do, it's only about 6 miles. So it's not, you know, long miles, 3 miles in, 3 miles out. Forest Service roads. Okay, if something happens, I can have an exit point here, here, here. Or if this happens, then, you know, does everybody turn around, or just certain people turn around, because there's usually two of us. So this having a plan B and kind of going through all the possible scenarios, it's really impacting me currently. It's like that lady Inchworm, you know, she got lost on the trail, ended up dying. You know, her first few decisions after her being lost were not probably the best ones, and it just kind of snowballed into not making some good decisions.
I actually took the same detour that she died on. I didn't realize that until I had gotten to the main roadhouse. Yeah, well, because like I said, I'm not a purist. I can't remember the name of the mountain that we climbed up, but I know it was after Bethel, Maine, and we were reading the comments, and they were talking about there was a ski resort down there where you can get pizza. So we walked down there, and it's like, we got hiker hunger. So it's like, hell yeah, let's go get some pizza. Mm-hmm. And so we're sitting there eating. And as always, we're always looking for the best shortcut. What's the better route to take instead of climbing back up the mountain and then going back another miserable way? Because that was, I ain't gonna lie, that was probably one of the scary moments on the Appalachian Trail, was climbing up that mountain, talking about a rock where it's nothing but slick mold. I guess you'd call it mold or whatever. And it just constantly going up, the wind's blowing in your face. And at that time, I didn't even have a rain jacket. I just had a poncho. So it's like, I'm like a trash bag in the wind with my punches just hitting me in the face, and it's like, sweet baby Jesus. And so anyways, yeah, it's like we're sitting there and I'm like, yeah, I don't want to go back up there. Anyways, we ended up finding a route that actually ran right next to a, they apparently said it's like a, supposed to be a top secret military base that everybody knows about. And I guess that's where they train you for, is it SARS? Searching, I guess, like if you're, yeah, I think it's, yeah, SEER or whatever. And anyways, walk through there and you could definitely get lost in there. Just, it was a good thing that we were able to navigate, and I was using Gaia and everything else to navigate through there. So I was actually navigating with my buddy Bold. We finally got to the road and we hitched and we got to, I believe the name of the hostel was called Maine Roadhouse, like spelled like the state of Maine. And the lady was, I forgot how she figured out. We might have told her that we came a different route or something like that. She's like, oh, how'd you come? It's like, oh, we came right next to that military base. She's like, oh, yeah, I know how you came. It's like, that's where that lady Inchworm died. I was like, no way. And she's like, yeah, she was apparently like a mile away from, I guess, the main headquarters of that base or something like that. And she died. And like that road that we walked down, we saw all the military people driving in there. They looked like they were, I don't know, like the big cheese or whatever, driving black trucks, and they were dressed like regular civilians, but you could tell they were military. So I don't know, it kind of like hit me a little bit, and I'm like, there was a little bit of moment in there where we got turned around ourselves, and it's like you can kind of see where she got turned around. And but I don't know, that just still blows my mind though that she got that far off the trail, because she had to have done the same thing if she was on the trail. She probably went up that mountain that I was talking about where the weather was just complete crap. And we veered off, you know, go get the pizza. But I don't know if that ski resort was there when she was walking through there. But if she went down the side of the mountain, I still wonder why she didn't go try to go back up. Because from my understanding, I think she left the trail to go to the bathroom or something. Yeah. And she got turned around and kept on going down. But no, yeah, it's crazy how that happened.
Yeah, and she, I think they ended up finding her 40 minutes from the trail. Mm-hmm. And and she was right next to that military base, and I think they even joined in to help search.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a horrible story. So here's a good one, and I think this impacts us a lot. I don't trust the weather predictions. So Kyle, how do you handle unexpected weather changes on your hike? You've done the two of the long trails. You've done the Lone Star hiking trail. You've been out in Guad, and especially in the, you know, in the backcountry, you want to make sure you understand the weather as best as possible, you know, up to the minute. When the weather changes and you're not ready for it, like how does that impacting you?
If you're up in the mountains, you kind of just have to expect it. So you can't really see a rain cloud coming and be like, oh, yeah, I'm not prepared for that. Like, this is going to be bad. It's just kind of like you have to roll with the punches and kind of just go with it. You know, like on the Continental Divide Trail, when I was going up a mountain that we were actually following on the trail, it started hailing on us and it was exposed and you really couldn't do anything. So how do you prepare for little pellets coming down and like beating you up or whatever, and you can't really do anything? So it's like the only thing we could really do, it's like I got my Tyvek out and wrapped it around my head, you know, try to create some cushion and stuff like that. That's the best thing you can do, is just know your equipment and just roll with the punches, you know. Like, that's why I'm a big fan of Tyvek. Like, you have multiple uses for Tyvek. It's like you can make a sign out of it to hitch, you can use it as like a something to put your tent on, your footprint. You can use it as a backup rain poncho, you know, all kinds of other stuff. You know, like if you're going to ask me what my favorite pieces of equipment is, it's probably going to be my Tyvek, probably. Yeah, I mean, that's the only thing you can do, is just kind of prepare as best as you can and just learn how to take cover if you can, how to avoid things. You know, like if it's going to be, I don't know, hot in the afternoon up in the mountains, you're better off ignoring or going away from the mountain so you're not going to get stuck in a thunderstorm up there. You know, you just kind of have to know how to read the weather, even though the weather's unpredictable.
I really enjoy the answer that you just gave with the aspect of knowing your gear, absolutely, and understanding that the gear can be used for multiple purposes. no one would ever think to put Tyvek on their head and it would make a shield. But yes, you're absolutely right. It would work. And so, you know, being able to think about what you currently have and make the best use of it. Ah, I love it. I love it. So Todd, what about you? I know how you handle unexpected weather.
Yeah, I just get in the car and go home.
No. Nope. We just bitch and complain about it until we sit on a porch and then go home.
Exactly. I mean, what else can you do? Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's real easy to quit when the car's right there.
God, it is. But no, in all seriousness, how do you handle when you're not next to the car and handling unexpected weather?
Just like Kyle said, you've got to depend on your gear. You got to know your gear. Got caught in a pretty good thunderstorm up on Isle Royal last year. And, well, it's time to throw the tent up, sit in the tent for a while.
Yeah. I try to, especially in the quad. So I start looking at weather predictions a couple of weeks out. And then I just try to think about, well, if you're in quads in February, I definitely don't think about high 80 temperatures. That is guaranteed. I'm not thinking about that. But, you know, I think about snow, hail, ice. How am I going to handle that? So I think, and also taking, I don't know, it probably doesn't do anything or there's no, like, benefit to it. But I like to start checking the weather a couple of weeks out and just kind of think about how the weather is flowing. And then also, like, try to think about what is every possible, like, if you're in Colorado, okay, there's a chance that you're going to get hit with a thunderstorm, rain. There's a chance you can get hit with hail. And just think about, like, what are all the possibilities. And it's probably going to be guaranteed that one of them will happen. And so I have added 100 degree heat in February in quads. And how am I going to handle that to my thought process?
Well, the answer to that's pretty simple, Jason.
What?
We could have hiked at night.
Yep. That's how you desert hike, early in the morning, late in the evening.
You're absolutely right. But then I'm thinking, okay, then you're in a tent during the day, as hot as it is. We're going to be fanning each other.
Oh, we just laid out under a shade tree, letting the breeze blow. It'd be okay.
But no, that's actually a great point, and I didn't even think about that. I was just too busy whining and complaining.
And I was too busy agreeing with you.
You know, Todd, I look back and I'm like, how in the heck did I allow myself to quit?
Because as soon as you said it out loud, I was like, yes, yes, that's a great idea. Your car has air conditioning, right? You know.
Yep. And to the listeners, Todd and I had a couple episodes of a trip report when we did the Guadalupe Ridge route, because it's not a trail, at least the parts that we did. And so you go back and listen to that, because, yeah, we had a lot of complaining and unexpected weather.
But a lot of fun.
Yeah. Oh, hey, when we were going down at night to Agua Dulce, Todd, no, this isn't funny. This isn't funny. Todd left me. It was pitch black dark.
Turned off my headlamp and everything.
Yeah, just follow the black hose. Well, I lost the black hose. And I just knew a mountain lion was going to come up and eat me. And I really, that was probably the second time I kind of almost panicked, where I was like, okay, what is happening here? And I kept yelling out. And then you're walking down with your headlamp on, and it seems like there's a drop off, like a cliff.
Oh yeah. The way it throws the shadows, it makes every little bump look like a chasm.
And oh man, I was worried. I'm like, either Bigfoot or a mountain lion is about to get me.
Well, when I hid behind that bush and jumped out at you, I guess I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah. All right, Kyle. So have you ever experienced equipment failures on a hike? And then did a plan B help you manage the situation? You had to have had as many miles as you've done. You've had to have something fail.
I don't know. When it comes to failure, the only thing I can really think of is my sleeping pad. but that's not like a danger thing. It was just a lack of sleep, comfortable sleep. I guess like times that I realize now it's like my Sawyer filters. I guess Sawyer started making their filters differently to where I guess you have to run a lot more water through them to start flowing, you know, like a good flow. And that started on the Appalachian. Well, I actually had the same problem with y'all on the Centennial Trail, like where it would not flow and I had to borrow your filter. And I was like, okay, maybe that was just a hiccup. I started the AT, same exact thing. And it took, I don't know, probably like a whole month for my water filter flow to catch up with my buddies that his, it was actually, I think he said it was the same filter he had on the Continental Divide Trail. So that filter probably sat and didn't get used from 2022 to 2024. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know if this is a good idea, but I also don't want to be, I don't want to have mud butt either. So
that happened to me. Todd's filter was flowing like Niagara Falls and mine's trickling. And I started panicking. I'm like, this is not a time where I have this kind of a failure. And it was a brand new filter. I think I used it once in my bathroom just to see if it makes sure it works. And then I brought it out on the trail and both times like the flow rate sucked. And I was like, all right, this is not cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's not really a big panic thing. It's just, I think nobody wants to be, I guess, the weakest link and nobody wants to hold anybody up. It's like,
well, nobody wants to be like, hey, can I borrow your filter?
Yeah, exactly.
I did.
It's like Pine Frog and Todd were like ready to go. And I'm like halfway through and I'm like, oh yeah, can I borrow your filter? So it's like, we can get out of here. I don't want to be holding everybody up. And that's the thing. It's like, if you're hiking with somebody, you don't want to hold anybody up. But if you're by yourself, it's like, I could sit here and eat more of my food and not hike. You know, this feels good.
Well, the good thing, Kyle, about it taking so long for your water to filter is we got to hang out by, what was that, Rapid Creek, and see the little fox playing over in the field. That was awesome. And if we had just grabbed water and gone, we wouldn't have seen that.
Yep.
I had to borrow Todd's, and there was no shame in my game. I'm like, Todd, we can be here for 9 hours, or you can let me borrow yours and we'll be out here in 2 minutes.
I said, the longer we're here, the closer the mountain lines are getting.
Yep. And what I was actually thinking is like, mine is trickling. So is that the norm? And then I'm trying to think of previous times with old filters, how the flow rate was, or does Todd's just have a hole in it? And it's just pouring out. Cause it was flowing. Yeah. And,
I ran a nail through it to clean it out.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Flows real good now.
Todd, what about you? With all the miles you've done, you've got to have some equipment failures on a hike.
I've had several sleeping pad failures, which, like Kyle said, it's not a deal breaker, but it sucks to be waking up every couple of hours laying on the cold ground. The first time I did the GRT, sleeping pad died on me. Did it again at Isle Royal. So that's always, you know, a pain in the butt. Tore a hole in my tent on Isle Royal last year. I think I either tripped on one of the guy lines or something, but then it starts raining. Well, luckily it was in a spot where it, you know, the way my tent's designed, it didn't leak into the tent. But, you know, you got gear repair for stuff like that. So you just roll with the punches.
No, but nothing too dangerous.
Nothing. I wouldn't say anything dangerous. Knock wood.
And just real quickly, do you think about, let's say you're planning for a big backpacking trip, and let's say it's the backcountry, the quads, or along one of the long trails where maybe you're not at a town maybe a few days away where it's important. Do you guys kind of go through the gear and maybe some of the things due to your experience that could happen that maybe is a little more important or dangerous before you start out, or you just head out and then as it happens, you handle it?
I mean, that's just where you have to know the gear that you carry. You know, like a primary thing that I look at when I'm looking at my gear as going with the saying, one is none, two is one, or something like that.
Yeah.
And you always want to have a backup. So it's like, I always want to have a multi-purpose something like a flashlight fails. It's like, okay, well, I still have my phone to where there's a flashlight on that. If my sleeping bag gets wet, I can still make an insulating layer out of my Tyvek. You know, try to have multi-purpose to everything. So that's mainly what I focus on, but I guess I would go through the gear, you know, I guess maybe talking about like, if I'm going to go through desert hiking, I'm going to focus on having my body more covered up versus like a t-shirt and regular shorts and just a regular hike, you know, walking the AT or something like that. But I don't necessarily go through the gear. Like if we're talking about specifically like through hiking, like going through a certain section, I'm not really going to go through my gear to make sure that I'm good to go. It's more of like, I would probably know if I had an issue with something coming into town, I'm like, okay, I'm going to replace this and then I'll be good to go. Not necessarily having to go through my gear every single time, but like if I'm just coming from my house and going out, then yeah, I'd probably run through it. You know, think of a scenario, you know, first case or worst case scenario, you know, like you were talking about earlier, Leno, like getting bit by a snake. What do you do in that situation? There's not a whole lot you can do. It's just try to keep your heart rate low and try to get to help as soon as possible, even though you might have to hit the SOS button if you're out in the middle of nowhere. But that's, I don't know. I really don't plan, I guess.
I'd bite that sucker back. Todd, what about you?
You know, I bet the depth of my planning would be, let's just say a rain jacket, for instance. If I'm just going on a couple of nights down on the Lone Star, I may take just my Frog Togs jacket. But if I'm going 2 weeks out on the Ouachita Trail, well, I don't want to be out there for three or four nights with a leaking rain jacket, so I might take my Arc'teryx jacket. So, you know, little tweaks like that would be about all I would change.
I had, and I didn't have a plan B because I never thought that, and just never, it never dawned on me that this could happen until I started doing research, which I've had two dangerous situations, not for me, but for other people using water bladders that we were with. So we're on the Lone Star hiking trail doing a 16-mile day. They're using the stupid bladders where nobody has visibility on their water. And, you know, I don't have visibility of what they're drinking. They don't have visibility of what they're drinking. So one guy just drank everything. And then the other guy, his bladder had a leak. So the first time it was me and Greg, and we talk about it in one, and he was one of the thru hikers on my first thru hike at the Lone Star Hiking Trail. 96 degrees. We did 16 miles. He got to his car. He ran out of water. And at that time, you know, I started carrying extra water for people that I'm with. Usually carry a half a liter for every person. I gave him half a liter and he ran out of that. We got to his car. He had heat stroke or heat exhaustion. He got in his car. He was looking out his front window at me and I thought he was okay, but he couldn't see. Everything was white. He voice called his wife, like, you know, hey, whatever on his phone, called his wife. I had no idea. I just drove off from the stupid bladder. Then the next was similar. The gentleman didn't realize that his bladder, there was a problem with the connection and it leaked out all his water. So I had, you know, a half a liter. I think we were doing 12 miles that time and he ran out of water and same thing with the, it was probably more heat exhaustion. I think Greg was, it was serious. I think John was, you know, discomfort, but certainly could have led to dangerous stuff. And at that moment, I was just carrying the water in the hip belts and in the backpack. Then I started doing research and found the best damn product on the market, the Trekker Joe's water bottle sleeves. And no turning back.
Are those any good?
Todd. Let me just show you. I'm going to swing this around. I have a shitload of gear, and that's just a little bit of it. I have backpacks. I have trail runners. I have rock climbing gear. There is not a piece of gear. I have Z-Packs. I have Hyperlite. I have outdoor vitals. I have it all. There is not a piece of gear that has changed the way I hike and backpack like that freaking Trekker Joe's water bottle sleeve.
But what about the company? I mean, is Trekker Joe's, are they reputable?
I'm a little biased because I'm a Texas homer, but they're a wonderful family. all the products are made in Texas. You're helping a child go to baseball lessons and not a CEO with a vacation, another vacation home. So to the listeners, there's a little advert on the front of every episode. I'm doing that because I love the products and the people too, but the products are absolutely amazing. It changes the weight of your backpack if you're big water carries. I always know how much water I have. Everybody that I hike with, I make them use one because I have about 9 of these suckers and I know how much water they have. No more bladders. It's a Trekker Joe water bottle sleep.
All of them that I saw on the AT and the CDT, everybody liked them.
Yeah, I ran into a guy on Isle Royal. I was like, hey, is that a Trekker Joe's? Yeah. I said, oh, you know that, you know about that guy, don't you?
Yeah, I've even shared a trail with him. Yeah, so equipment failures, it's that damn bladder. And I don't care how many miles someone's hiked. It is a danger if you use a bladder. And you're not going to ever convince me otherwise. Get smart water bottles. Get Trekker Joe sleeve. Anyway, so yeah. So I've had some failures in some dangerous situations. I don't know. I think with Greg, it was really dangerous. And I don't know how he recovered and was able to get home. With the other gentleman, it was just really uncomfortable. And kind of like we knew what was happening. So we addressed it. But yeah, so that. Definitely having equipment failures and experiencing that. And, you know, and also think about how many people use bladders that up until this point, they've never been punctured, leaked. And so they didn't have to go through this. And hopefully that if that ever happens, they're in a situation where they can just get off trail and be safe instead of being out in the backcountry somewhere where it's a true issue. So, all right, Kyle, so what is your, in your opinion, what should hikers do if they get lost or encounter any kind of navigational issues? And how can a plan B help?
Well, that's where I guess I would go back to the one is none and two is one saying where most people that are through hiking, they're using their phone, using the apps and everything else. So if that goes down, I would rely on my Garmin to figure out where I'm at. But I guess if that completely failed, if somebody got lost, you're better off staying put right where you're lost at. And hopefully you're not that far off the trail. And eventually somebody's going to walk past, especially if you're on a busy trail. You can hear somebody talking. And nowadays most gear is made with like a whistle or something to make some type of noise to where somebody might be able to hear you. That would be my best advice if somebody got lost. But that's my backup plan. You know, there's been situations where I've been turned around and stuff like that. And especially you get turned around, like if you're making your own shortcuts as you go, like up there in Maine, we were taking a lot of old logging roads. And my buddy Cash, that's from Canada, that's a normal thing up there where they go trail running and they make their own trails. Because I guess apparently up there, the government doesn't want you to know where the trails are at, so they won't map them. But it's a game for them when they go trail running. That they'll go up there and, you know, make GPS pinpoints with their watches, you know, tracking them and stuff like that. But he was teaching me, like, when you're going in through those unknown roads, because you don't know exactly where they're at, you always go, you always go, like, adjacent to them, I guess, instead of running parallel, like, trying to run straight across them, because you might walk right over the road versus if you're going at it diagonally. There we go, diagonally. If you're going at it diagonally, you're more likely to come across it and walk right across it. And you'll probably be looking straight across the road versus if you just walk right over it, you're not going to catch it.
Todd, what about you?
Be familiar with your area before you even leave, before you even get on the trail. Yeah. You know, you're using your phone to navigate. Cool. I use my phone all the time. If it dies, I've got my watch. But if all that fails, I've studied the map before I even stepped on the trail, so I have an idea of where I'm at.
Yeah,
that's what I would say. Just be more familiar before you even leave the house.
Yeah,
and I wonder how many people, and that's leading these hikes. That's what one of the things I do with them is talk about, like, before you should always have a paper map, but you should know how many Forest Service roads are you going to cross? What mile markers are they around? How fast, what pace do you walk on a flat trail? And so I try to keep a pace at 2.5 miles an hour, and then I stop at an hour, and then I give them the, everybody, tell me where we're at on this map. We've walked that. You've just walked 2.5 miles per hour. We've hiked an hour. It's easy math. And you look at the map and tell me where we're at. You've lost your phone. Your phone just died. You took a picture of the trailhead sign. So when you had your phone, you had a time marker when you started the hike, or you just remember when you started. It's a fun game. But yeah, I mean, you have to know what you're fixing to get into. So yeah, I totally agree with that. Todd, how many times we've been lost? Well, we were close to the trail.
Yeah, but it was awesome.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Halfway through these lead hikes, you know, we have a bathroom break. People, you know, one gender over there, one gender over there, and we go. But and after a while, like, you think, okay, they should be back by now. And you start looking, they're walking. There's a group of people and they're walking in a different direction. And I'm like, hey, we're over here. Yeah. I got lost too on the Lone Star. I had to break up my phone. I was embarrassed. All right. So due to Todd's age, you're going to answer this question first. So then you don't forget it.
What's that you say?
How can having a plan B, I think that I love this question. How can having a plan B address issues that may arise with your group dynamics, such as decisions when there's issues, different hiking paces, disagreements? Like, have you guys on, and I don't know, Todd, that we even talked about it, but like, how does having a plan alleviate some of these issues that arise?
Well, if you've got a plan, it shows that you've actually thought about what you're doing before you ran into the problem. If you run into the problem and you start panicking, oh my God, what do we do? Well, you went out here blind, didn't you? You've got to think ahead before you get on the trail. You've got to run over a few scenarios. You don't have to plan for, okay, what if I die while I'm out here? But you know, things happen. You've got to be able to adapt. Just don't panic. That keeps coming to me while we're talking about this, is so many times people run into a little hiccup and they panic.
And so, Todd, have you ever been in a situation where you're hiking with multiple parties and disagreements about decisions that should be made arise?
I've been lucky enough to never been in that situation. I mean, we didn't have any issues on the Centennial, you know, with what are we going to do when we get to such and such? It was never an issue. You and I, we didn't have any disagreements about, you know, well, we're going to cut some miles off of this. Well, no, I want to keep going this way. It just has never happened. Luckily, I've never had to deal with that.
Okay. Kyle, what about you? I mean, you've done some long trails. You have the Tramley, group dynamics, decisions that need to be made. Do you guys talk about, plan it out, like, in case this stuff happens, that this is how you as a group are going to handle it?
Not really. I mean, I think there's definitely a difference. Like, I know Todd's like a big planner. Joe's a planner. Like, they're the ones that will look out ahead, look at the map and stuff like that. Me, I'm just very good with the flow. And that's how it was the whole trail for me. And that's how it was everybody I was around. You know, like, we'd come across other hikers and they ask, where are y'all stopping tonight? It's like, oh, we don't know. We're just going to walk until it gets dark and camp where we drop. You know, it was kind of rare. Probably the only time we would ever get a good idea of like where we're actually going to camp is like when we got to our last water resource, and that's where like, okay, are we going to dry camp tonight, or are we going to camp at the next water source? Are we going to camp here? But like going back to like what you were talking about with Todd, I've had disagreements like with my buddy Cash about the whole thing I brought up a while ago, going to Rutland, Vermont to stay inside the Yellow Deli. That's where I brought up my plan B. I was like, I'd like to do this. I was like, this is kind of a unique experience of the AT. And my buddy Cash is like, oh, we got a lot of miles to do. And I'm like, well, I was like, that's my invite to you. That's up to you. If you want to go that way, well, I'm going to go this way. And he's like, all right. And anyway, so it's like we had that disagreement, but then obviously he regretted not going with me after he figured out that I got free food and a shower. And I saw him going uphill while I'm walking down the hill. So it's like, well, too late now. So that's about the closest I got to that.
Yeah. I think for me, like, and Todd, usually, like, you know, Henning and I will have discussions with possibilities and how we would handle it. And Todd, I think what I enjoyed about our decision-making process is, you know, we both gave an idea and we were both pretty logical in our assessment of the situation. Yeah. And it was kind of nice that we didn't have a ton of decisions to make, but the ones we did, I think were pretty important, and we kind of just talked through it and we both agreed. So what about, Ty, this is for you. What about unexpected wildlife encounters? I mean, you've done some areas that were probably fairly new to you, or maybe
hogs,
new
moose.
Yeah. So how does the potential of these types of situations play into your planning?
Well, I always plan for rattlesnakes because I'm not scared of them, but I don't want to step on them. You know what I mean? But I mean, you've just got to go with the you've got to roll with the punches and go with the flow. I'm on Isle Royal. I come around the corner and there's a cow moose. Well, I'm going to get behind this tree and let her decide what she's going to do.
just look at you.
Yeah. The bison on the Centennial Trail. That first day after our 1 mile detour, we got to the second trailhead and there's two big bull moose practically laying by the trailhead sign. Well, man, we're going to have to just make a big half circle around them. You know, it's just, yeah, you just got to roll with the punches. I mean, cause we're in their house. I mean, I know that sounds cliche, but
yeah, but you do give it thought.
Like, oh yeah.
And do some investigation on what could you potentially run into. And
yeah, that's why the hogs on the Caprock Trail took me by surprise. Cause I had no idea that there were that many hogs and they were that far north in Texas. You know, that's something I look for on the Lone Star Trail, you know, mm-hmm, something that's where in my brain, that's where hogs live, is in the, you know, more mild climates. But no, they're up there in the heat of the panhandle everywhere.
I would have said, heck no, I'm out. I have a phobia of hogs. Kyle, what about you? I mean, you went through black bear country, and I don't think there's a lot of black bear attacks, but I think certainly you need to be leery of them. So how did these possible encounters impact you and your plans?
More than black bears, grizzlies.
Yeah, I went through grizzly bear country. I really wasn't actually scared of the black bears. I was more scared of the ticks and getting like Lyme disease than I was from the black bears. I mean, there was only maybe like two scenarios on the Appalachian Trail where the black bears probably even came up to our tent. One was when a guy that we were hiking with named Geared Up got out of his tent, and my buddy Cash and I were still inside of our tent, and Geared Up starts clapping, we're like, get out of here, get, or whatever. And I was like, what's going on, a bear or what? And he's like, yeah, there was a bear right behind Cash's tent. And I was like, oh, okay. And he was just sniffing around or whatever. I mean, that could have turned into a dangerous scenario, but that bear obviously still had fear of humans, you know, getting up and clapping at him or whatever, get out of here or whatever. And then there was, I can't remember the name of that campsite in Maine. I just remember we were in the White Mountains, and apparently I was sharing I forgot what to call those. There's a part of the trail on the AT where you have to sleep on top of a deck or whatever. And apparently, well, the guy I was sharing the deck with was like former special forces and everything else. And he said that there was apparently like a bear walking around scratching the side of the boards or whatever at night. And I guess I was dead to the world asleep and I didn't hear it, but other people in the camp heard it. But same thing. It's like, we probably all slept with our food. Probably. I'm just taking a guess. I don't know, but it's not like an openly discussed thing on the trail.
Yeah. Whoa. Sleeping with your food is not supported by the Trailblazing Texas podcast.
Don't condone it. Yeah. Anyways, yeah, same thing though. It's like nobody's tent got broken into, but that black bear definitely got curious enough to get that close to us. But like I've already talked so much. I forgot what the basis of the question was.
Just wildlife, like, and how you plan for it.
Okay. So like grizzly bear country was actually when I was scared, and it was one of those things you thought about constantly. It's like, okay, if I go around this turn, you know, what am I going to do if I come across a grizzly bear right here? You know, am I actually going to play dead, or am I going to, you know, try to fight? Because it's like, you came across multiple people's opinions when I was hiking on the Continental Divide Trail. Like when I was going into, actually, yeah, when I was hitching into Anaconda, Montana, I actually caught a hitch with a guy that I think he said his son was a grizzly bear biologist or something like that. And apparently they had done studies where apparently you're better off just playing dead, because the bear will no longer see you as a threat and will apparently eventually leave you alone. But also at the same time, yeah, but apparently at the same time, are you not going to try and fight back if the bear's like digging into your guts or something? You know, you're going to play dead while you're getting
biting your face off.
Yeah. So
can you imagine Kyle turns a corner, sees one and goes,
And that was like another thing too, that he brought up too, where like bear spray is only going to be, that same guy said that bear spray is only going to be effective. It is more effective than carrying a pistol and stuff like that, because it's a wider range of hitting in the face and stuff like that. But, apparently bears are also attracted to that. So it's, yep, like, if you have that scent on you, they will come back to that same spot. They've actually studied to where, right where that bear got sprayed, they will come back and rub around in it and everything else. So that's something you have to think about too. You know, like if you ever did use your bear spray, and they talk about, you know, not having to sleep with your food, you're also going along the lines where you shouldn't be sleeping with your bear spray. You know,
I've always heard, if it's black, fight back. If it's brown, lie down. If it's white, night, night.
Yep. Absolutely.
Oh, like where I got mixed opinions on that, when I was getting a hitch by a hunting guide going into Lincoln, Montana, he was telling me he treats grizzly bears just like he would black bears. It's like, if he tries to scare him off or whatever, or if he's going to fight him back, he's going to fight him back. So it's kind of like one of those toss-ups. Like, who do you believe? Do you believe the guy that has a bear biologist or that studies bears, or are you going to actually believe the guy that's out there with the bears and probably hunts around them and sees them all the time? You know, because I've even seen on like hunting videos, when people go to Alaska, they raise their arms and make themselves look big, and majority of the time the grizzly bear runs off. So, because we actually ran into a grizzly bear in Glacier National Park, and what was funny about that it's actually a whole story right there, but everybody was relying on me. We came up to the grizzly bear and like, what do we do, milkman? I'm like, I don't know. I'm from Texas. We don't got bears. So I told everybody, I was like, well, if everybody's going to listen to me, you know, stand behind me and, you know, wave your hands and make yourself look big. And the grizzly bear started walking towards us. And he probably got within probably 10 feet of us. And you can see his nostrils going back and forth, sniffing the air. And,
oh man,
I guess we didn't catch his interest enough to where he went back to eating the berries, and he was going back and forth on the trails. And we wanted to go around him, but it's like, to our left, it was just a complete drop off on a cliff. And if we went right, we were climbing up the side of a mountain, and then the bushes were well above our heads, where if he did charge us, we wouldn't be able to see him. So we just stood there, and eventually I think it was three other hikers came behind us, and they all had bear spray. Well, two of them had bear spray, one of them had a pistol, and then I don't know what people's opinions are on firearms or whatever, but like,
this is a Texas podcast.
That's right.
Okay. So I had a pistol with me the entire way, And so anyways, it was just kind of a funny scenario because, what was it, probably seven people with bear spray and then two guys with pistols. So we're walking behind the bear. We both have our pistols out and everybody has their pepper spray out, just waiting for that bear to turn around or whatever. And eventually that bear turned around, like we scared him, and he stood up on his hind legs and he just booked it. So it obviously showed our big numbers or whatever, our number of show or whatever, that ran him off. And that's what I was trying to tell everybody too, before those three other hikers came up, is like, statistically we should be okay. Cause there, I think there's not a documented attack on groups bigger than or smaller than three.
So I want to say I've heard that too.
Yeah. It was something like that. It's been a while since I looked at that statistic, but like, that's what I was trying to remember. I was like, statistically we should be okay. And it's like, well, it's statistically going to get us by this bear. And I'm like, well, do you want to walk back? No.
And just to be clear, on the Trailblazing Texas podcast, we do not support having food in your tent. But by God, if you have a pistol, we're all right with it.
Well, and that goes back to being familiar with the hike you're going on. You know, before you leave the house, okay, there's mountain lions on this trail. I might want to, you know, brush up on the proper protocol. In general, wild animals don't want anything to do with you. I mean, there's a whole hunting industry built around going out and finding these wild animals to hunt. And we're going out, walking in the woods for a day, going, oh man, that bear's, he's looking for me. That bear doesn't want nothing to do with you. You know, don't panic.
Yeah, something that we started to actually learn from our buddy Cash, you know, doing all that trail running up in Canada with the grizzly bears and moose and all that stuff around. You're obviously not going to be the favorite on the trail, but like he said, buying a cheap speaker to carry with you. Because instead of constantly like yelling or carrying the dumb bear bell or whatever that really doesn't work, you're playing music to where you're giving pretty good warning or whatever, because the radio is going to have a louder frequency, I think, with the bears. So like, as the example that my buddy Cash told me, before he was running with a speaker, he would run into bears and moose all the time, to where he started running with the speaker, he ran into nothing. And that's what I experienced going into like, I think it was Helena, Montana. I was going in, it's like, I was like, eh, I want the speaker off. You know, I kind of want to listen to nature or whatever. Well, all of a sudden I started seeing moose and black bear and stuff like that. And I'm like, nope, I don't want to deal with this. So I turned that speaker on and I went from seeing everything to nothing. I was like, yep, I'm going to blast the speaker the rest of the way, because that's all I'm trying to do is just finish this trail.
Yep, I think I fall into that same jerk category, because I bought a Bluetooth speaker just for a little trip I did on the Ouachita. I wanted to do the entire Oklahoma section in a day, and I knew that would mean hiking at night, which, okay, I don't mind hiking at night with somebody, but by myself, it's creepy as hell. So I had my little Bluetooth speaker on my Camelback, and, you know, no, I didn't do the whole thing that I planned on, but I felt a lot better knowing that speaker, the animals aren't used to listening to the sword. They don't care. They're going to run away.
Well, I, you know, Todd, I would agree with that. But the time that I ran into Bigfoot on the Lone Star hiking trail.
And that wraps up another exciting episode of the Trailblazing Texas podcast. We hope you enjoyed the episode today, and stay tuned for our next episode, where we will pick back up where we left off and guarantee to uncover many more hiking gems and share many more tips to enhance your experience on the trail. Until then, happy trails and happy hiking.